Do you want to build your brand by being a guest on industry-leading podcasts? If you're a business leader, an author, or a speaker, my guess is that you do. Picture this. You, a dynamic executive easily connecting with engaged audiences, turbocharging your top-of-funnel marketing, and creating a treasure trove of content with every episode. Podcasting is a game changer that you've been waiting for. And PodcastAlly.com is your VIP ticket to podcast PR success. Say goodbye to the ordinary and hello to the extraordinary exposure. Let the Podcast Ally team connect you with the best-in-class podcast for you to be a guest on. Head over to PodcastAlly.com and use the promo code DT for a 10% discount on Podcast Ally services. That's PodcastAlly.com, promo code DT. Welcome to High Octane Leadership with Donald Thompson. This season, we're diving deeper with more solo episodes, where I'll share the experiences that have led to recognition by EY, Forbes, Fast Company, and others. Not as a boast, but as milestones on my entrepreneurial path. From growing multi-million dollar firms to successful business exits and building high performance teams with a global perspective. I'll reveal the insights and strategies from my journey and share them with you so that we can win together. Alongside these solo episodes, we'll have industry visionaries and thought leaders, and we'll explore effective leadership. Ready to empower your leadership journey with real success stories? Let's embark on this transformational journey together. In this episode of High Octane Leadership, I'm talking with Zach Nunn, a visionary entrepreneur and the founder of Living Corporate, a cutting-edge experience management startup revolutionizing the workplace. With a core focus on workplace fairness, Zach and his team leverage analytics, talent enablement, brand storytelling to cultivate an environment that prioritizes employee trust and market confidence. In addition to spearheading Living Corporate, Zach is a driving force behind Living Corporate Podcast Network, dedicated to amplifying the voices of Black and brown professionals in the workplace. Through this platform, he strives to create a space for authentic conversations and insights, fostering diversity, equity, and inclusion. Thanks for joining me on the show, Zach.
Donald, what's going on, man? How you doing?
Hey, good to hear from you again, Zach. Good to see you, my friend.
Good to see you.
Ready to chop it up?
I'm ready to chop it up, too. Listen, you know, today we're talking about work-life balance, right? You know, entrepreneurship, it can be consuming, right? I think especially if you're really passionate about whatever you're doing, or if you're really anxious about whatever you're doing and you're being scared. There's a bunch of factors that go into entrepreneurship having the danger of being boundaryless work, right? At the same time, like, that creates burnout. You can't sustain like that if all you're doing is just the grind of your job. I mean, so I'm curious about, like, when we talk about work-life balance, just even conceptually, like, what does that mean to you, that phrase, that idea?
Yeah, and I'll be a little controversial, right? I think work-life balance is the wrong way to think about it. And it's really important to use terms that define what truly is the objective, and that is work-life integration. That is work-life collaboration. That is work-life partnership, right? Because balance, if we think about what that word means, is that something can be perfectly aligned. Like if you go in your automobile, right? And even though I'm not a car person per se, but I know when my car doesn't feel in alignment or my wheels aren't balanced, my car isn't riding smooth. So I take my car to the dealership, they put it on the machine and they balance it perfectly based on the machine settings. And we as individuals, as entrepreneurs, as employees, as high achievers, we think we can achieve that perfect balance, and that's the wrong way to think about it. The way I think about it that has helped me, right, is what is the relationship I have with work? And how does work fit into how I want to take care of my family, how I want to meet my goals, how I want to build my career? And when you look at it like that, then you think about having a conversation with your manager, your team, your employer about, wait a minute, in order for me to be productive, I need to make sure I am at the tea party that my daughter is having, at the recital, at the baseball game, but it doesn't mean I can be at every single thing in my kid's life, but I don't want to miss anything important and meaningful. And if I need to leave at 4 o'clock to go do that, I'm going to have the professional maturity to say I might need to have to answer a few emails when my kids are down for the night. That's when I was a growing entrepreneur with a young family, right? I had to learn how to think about and manage both of those things without lowering the standard for my productivity, for my outcome. The second thing to think about when we think about that word balance versus integration is integration starts to think about things working together. Balance is two parts of a scale, so to speak, right? That integration means that my responsibilities at work are not necessarily more important than family, but they support my family. So I remember having to have a conversation with my young kids of why daddy couldn't be at everything. And I had to explain to them when they were old enough to articulate and understand it, that my goal is that when you go to college, if you want to go to college, that I can write a check for that fee. That if you don't want to go to college and you want to start a business, my son David did not want to go to college, but we invested in two homes together and he has a net worth in his early 20s more than most people in their 40s because we took his college money and we put it into real estate. But I remember telling David, these are the reasons why dad has to make some choices about the difference between what I'm working on and what I'm spending time on so that we all get that long-term benefit. So anyway, I know that's a long answer to that initial question, but I think it's about the integration of it.
Yeah.
Not the balance of it.
No, look, I agree with you, right? It's interesting, Donald. I'm accessing my memory, right? So I'm thinking through, like, this was back in 2014 or so. I was working at Accenture. And it's interesting, right? Like, kind of to your point about entrepreneurships, a lot of times, if you look back in your career, you'll see that you're building the building blocks of your business before you even start your business, right? And so when I was at Accenture, I was really passionate about creating a thought leadership series about navigating the world of work for millennials, which were the hot Gen Zers at the time. And also targeted for Black and Brown folks. I remember it. So we had a thought leadership series where we'd write a blog and then we'd have a speaker who would be a senior partner at the firm. And then we would have a conversation, right? So it was a monthly series. It was really like a podcast, but it was internal. Anyway, one of the topics we talked about was work-life balance. And the blog that I wrote for that month was Work-Life Balance is a Myth. And it got a lot of heated reactions internally because it was like, we can't say that because we believe in work-life balance at Accenture. And I said, work-life balance is a myth because there is no, I said, first of all, like when you look at the rate of productivity and expectation since the 1940s to today, as well as the rate of inflation and pay, those things are not, they're not equitable. So the reality of work and life is that we are working more and we're working harder every year. The reality, because of, again, like just the economic factors and historical data trends, is that work is life. Okay. So that's hard to receive, though. Like, that's a hard thing. That's a very dystopian, Orwellian thing to receive, that work is life. But work is life. So the question is like, so then what does your work life, to your language, integration, or, and I was saying blend, what does that look like? Now, there's a broader philosophical discussion of, do you want work to be intrinsic to your existence? Irrespective of what you want it to be, work is intrinsic to your existence. But the question is, what does it look like to get out of that? Well, I mean, that's a discussion I'm excited about as we continue these dialogues for your audience about, you know, entrepreneurial strategy and what you're trying to build and licensing versus selling or whatever the case may be. But the wheel is there. And so, like, there has to be, I think, some acceptance of the reality that the work is going to be there. And so the question is, I love your framing of how do you navigate that reality? Having those conversations with the people that you love. And that means, though, Donald, what I'm hearing, you tell me if I'm wrong, you had to first start and identify what things are rubber and what things are glass in this dynamic of work and life. Am I wrong?
You covered a lot. So let me zero in on the framing based on what we call things, because that's really important, what we call things, right? And so work-life blend, I think, is actually a better phrasing, right? Because it's clear. Most people can conceptually understand it very quickly. It's not highly technical. So work-life blend. So now what individuals need to do, what I had to do, this is just speaking from experience, is it's hard to make any big decisions in your life work without knowing what you want. What do you want the outcome to be, right? Because if you are working in an organization and you want to get promoted, well, how are you going to get promoted if you're not taking on extra projects? How are you going to get promoted if you don't go to the after-hours things to be visible with leaders and executives, right? If you're wanting to grow your career, there are certain sacrifices and levels to this thing that you have to address. But you don't have to do it for all 30, 40 years of your career. See, what most people do is they look at a short-term time continuum versus knowing what they want long-term to understand the blend at different times and different cycles, different ages of your kids, different levels of your career. Here's one thing in particular that I did right. I did a lot wrong, but this is what I did right. Early in my career, I didn't think about work-life blend. I thought about getting skills and capacity that would allow me to have better career choices in the future, because I understood that if I'm an A player, I would have more flexibility with my management and my company. So early in my career, I wasn't thinking about 40-hour work week, how much vacation I got. I was thinking about every hour I'm working, am I learning something new? Am I overcoming something that allows the company to move forward? And is the work I'm doing positioning me, right, for advancement in the future? Because here's the thing that gets me all the time, right, in terms of understanding different generations, different people, different mindsets, is people are talking about work-life blend and balance and 40 hours a week and all that, and you're not even good at your job yet. The reason I had to work more than 40 hours a week early in my career is I didn't know what I was doing. I wasn't good yet. So I needed the extra 5 or 10 hours a week to make sure I was exceeding expectation, not just meeting them. But I knew what I wanted. And here's the thing, and now I laugh about it, and this isn't like, one of my first goals in sales is I wanted to make $100,000 a year. I thought that would change the world, right? Like, I was like, man, if I can get to a six-figure income, I got it, right? And I remember talking to my sales VP at the time, and he said, Don, tell me your goals, blah, blah. And I was like, I want to make a six-figure income, and I'm willing to dial till the dollars flow. Like, that's what I told him. I said, look, I'm willing to dial till the dollars flow. And he sat back in the chair. He said, he said, Don, what I will tell you, young man, is number one, I like your ambition. That's why we're meeting. But number two, I will tell you that $100,000 just isn't enough. he said, it just isn't enough. And so what he guided me with at that moment, though, because he was talking to me as an emerging high achiever, right? Is he said, Don, here's what you want to think about. You're thinking about the money. You need to be thinking about the industry, the mentorship, the company, and ensure that every step you take can be multiplied because you're in the right environment. And then when you get the money, you can multiply that money with knowledge, network, and opportunity, not just that singular goal of I want to make $100,000 a year. So he opened my mind to build a long-term plan. And then here's what I had to do once I got that motivation and that plan. I had to say, wait a minute, I'm still a young father, right? I still have things that I want to do socially. There's things that I want to do. So I had to then make a list of what I wanted and then the priority list of those things. So I was making deliberate choices. What I think is a big challenge early on in people's careers, or even as they advance, is that they think their work-life blend is their employer's responsibility. And it is a partnership with who you work for. And you shouldn't work for someone that isn't in partnership with you on that. Your job for the money that you make, the money you agreed, is to do a certain job, certain expectations, XYZ. And most companies these days are also committing to helping you succeed as a whole person. See, what we get twisted is we think when we're talking about empathy and belonging at work and all of the things that I believe and advocate and are part of my core, we think they're things just to make us feel good. They should also be things to help us be more financially stable and growing, right? That belonging at work means I need to belong to your emerging leaders program. That belonging at work means I need to belong to your mentoring program so that I'm developing the skills, the knowledge, and the network that will allow me to make better choices about how I spend my time at work in relation to the other things that I'm doing in my life. And so I think that mental mindset is really important, how we think about that work-life blend.
No, 100%. It's interesting. So my mom is a huge Denzel Washington fan, and by extension, I'm a huge Denzel Washington fan. And one of the quotes she would always quote back to me, right? She would quote this quote to me when I was a kid, up until I graduated from high school. She would say, "Look, you know, Denzel said, you do what you want, what you got to do now, so you can do what you want to do later," right? And so that to your point about like, hey, like blends. When I think about blend, I think about like two liquids or oils in a container. I think about them shifting and changing and moving around, right? That's what that word I think about. I just think about something very fluid. And you're right. Like there's this idea of, well, no, I need this exact thing right now, and it needs to be like that forever. And it's like, well, oh, blends shift and are, frankly, blends are seasonal, right? If I can mix up my metaphors, but they shift, they change over time. And so, you know, for me, to your point about your early career, and now some of this might be generational too, Donald, because you're like a late Gen X or early baby boomer. I was raised by baby boomers. So like some of my mentality is older school. We've kind of talked about it. Even off mic, you and I vibe at a level that I don't know if you talk to a lot of other people in their early 30s who like, so like that. So, but my point is, it's like, when I came into career, Donald, I was like, no, I'm just trying to work. Like, hey, I'm trying to learn. My dad would always tell me, hey, you take this job, you're getting paid to learn. So work and go learn. Capture as much learn. He, like, my father told me all the time, shout out to Ed Nine. He talked all the time, hey, it's a job to learn. You're not going to be there long. You might be there a year. You might be there a year and a half. Might be there 2 years. Son, you're getting paid to learn. And so I didn't take PTO. Like, and I'm not saying that to pat myself on the back. I'm not saying that it was even right. I'm saying that my blend back then was heavy on work. I got married early. We had no children, and I was just working, right? When I got promoted, like to get my, to your point about hard work, working hard and getting good at your job so you can get promoted. And this also is the tax of being on the margins. Donald, do you know for me to get promoted at Capgemini, global consulting firm, for those of us, like 300 some thousand employees, I went and built 6 different change management org transformation strategies across their enterprise. I built custom change management strategies for each of their verticals and then presented that to their executive leadership team and said, here's what I've done to be a manager. Y'all's directors can't do that. So of course I got promoted. And then when I got promoted, then I went on and I took another job. But like, the point is like, you know, me, 34-year-old Zach with 2 children and a paid off home and a second house and his own business, who I very much so prioritize family now. Could I see myself doing that again? Hell no. No, absolutely not. But that was a season.
You're in a different season, right? You're in a different phase. And I think that is one of the most important things I would like our audience to understand is that work-life blend also has to do with what phase of your career you're in, what phase of your home life you're in. And when you have that energy and focus and time to make your mark in those moments, right? And then when you need to transition to a more reasoned schedule or perspective, you have the ability to do that at a higher level. And so the now that's you and I, that we are very kindred spirits. So my kids and Gen Z is like, well, yeah, I want all that right now. I want to get promoted. I want to make the money. And yeah, I don't want to work on the weekend. I don't want to work after 5 o'clock. Now, I don't know that that's available in a tough economy, but if it is, you know, it's good work if you can do it. But I think the most of the folks that are listening to our voice are trying to get into that high achievement lane. See, I don't think people are listening to podcasts of how to be regular.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Like how to coast and not get caught. Right. You know what I mean? Like I don't think that's my listener. That's not my audience.
I don't
audience.
Think so either.
Do you know what I mean? Like that's not my audience. Right. So those of us that want to be high performers, but to your point, this is a real conversation, but don't want to burn out, want to be high performers, but want to manage their mental health, want to be high performers, but want to be a good husband, a good parent, a good partner, right? Whatever your situation is, right? Now we have to look at how do we intentionally make decisions about who we spend time with, what we spend time on, and how much time we spend. So to me, the advice I give when I'm counseling folks, I'm advising leaders, and this is CEOs of billion-dollar corporations that I have the grace, the pleasure, the opportunity to work with, or someone that is just making their mark, here's something that is the same. We all have 24 hours in a day, and the winners spend it more efficiently. We all have 24 hours a day. The winners spend it more efficiently. And the big thing that high achievers do to get that cheat code to move to the next level is making sure that their network is highly functional and highly valuable. Because I, now as a business owner of exiting companies and all the different things, I can leverage my Rolodex to get questions answered faster than ever before. And so people always ask, what would you teach your 20-year-old self? What would you tell yourself 20 years ago? That your network is your net worth, because the faster you can access good information, insight, and knowledge, the smarter you are tomorrow at work. I had a gentleman, and I won't name drop, but he used to work for me. He's now CEO of an AI firm. And he hit me up the other day because he was evaluating a business. So he sent me the deck. I looked through it and I said, looks great, blah, blah, blah. Here's three things you need to understand about this kind of business, right? And he just sent me a text back. He's like, yo, thanks. He said, I appreciate it. But more importantly, here's what he put in the text. You saved me a couple of hours of research by getting me these three questions I need to dial in on. And thank you for me and for my family. Because he would have done the 3 hours of research. But because I had been in this business, I had sold a business like this before, I just could answer the question just like it was Tuesday. Like it was no effort for me, heavier lift for him because the arena was new to him. So to the degree that you can use your network to now save you time and be more efficient and effective, that's how I can get more things done, more things accomplished, because I also intertwine that into how I spend time. So the who you spend time with is as important as the what.
Yeah. It's hard to overstate the value of that, because if you're really in the space, if you're really in the arena, especially talking about, you know, high performers, right? And or like new entrepreneurs, the power of having a network and having someone give you information that otherwise you might have to try to get on your own, especially someone who can give you that information so that you don't have to learn it through making a mistake, right? Because a lot of times the people that are, if you have really dope people in your network, they've learned it because they messed up. And so they know what they're about to tell you is right.
That's right.
Right? They know what they're about to tell you is 100% right. It's much better to just get that information than it is to be like, okay, well, I Googled this and I read this article and I looked at this and I looked at that. Now I'm gonna make a decision. And that decision oftentimes will still not be right. So then it's the cost of you having to reset and learn again and try again. Man, the time saved and the benefit of having people in your network who can just go, hey, here you go, take this thing. And that applies to your work. Like, let's say if you're not a full-time entrepreneur, a founder, or anything, part-time, anything, side hustle, anything. Let's just talk about your 9-to-5 job, building and networking laterally for people, so that people can tell you what's really going on even at the job. That is a huge time saver. And that's going to save you so much stress, right? The cost is, of course, it's dollars out your pocket. It's the mental strain, emotional investment and strain, the spiritual investment and strain, and your actual time wasted.
That's right.
That network is everything, man.
It really is. And you know, as we look at this point of that work-life blend, the reason we're going not on tangents, but on some of the edge elements that give you the ability to actually blend work, there is a skill set to it. Right. And a lot of times, you know, here's another thing that people will say is I want to understand time management. Well, I think it's difficult to manage time. I like to use the phrase time choices. Right. Because really everything that you do with your time is a choice. And to the degree that the choices you make align with your personal and professional goals, now the more effective that you're going to be. Right. The more powerful that you're going to be. Right. In terms of what you want to do and what you want to become. And it's, you know, to your point, so much of what I know and have learned has been trial and error. And it took me longer than I'm even, you know, I'm not embarrassed because failure is a part of winning. But man, it took me a little bit too long to learn and have the humility to ask really bright people what they think. And here's what I will tell you. The more talented and higher achiever they are, the more they want to give to the next generation of leader. It's the person that's faking it. It's the person that's fake flossing. It's the person that is going to try to hoard information. Most successful people want to see other people win because you're not a threat to them. They know why they're good. They know what they're willing to do. So they want to be helpful, right? But most people don't ask, right? Because they see that person. Here's the thing that people do, and I want to be really clear, this is something I had to overcome. They see people at a destination and don't evaluate them for their journey. And people's journey is all filled with ups and downs. I know very few people that just took a straight line to amazing success. So most people can actually relate to the fact that you're having some struggles too. But when you look at someone that is at a different destination as you, you think that their journey didn't have its difficulties, that they didn't think about giving up, quitting, that they didn't have days where, man, should I really start my own business, right? Is it the right time? And all those fears and doubts. And so I think that once we know one another's journey, we start treating people more like real folks and we just talk. And man, to the degree that we can do that, it's going to accelerate how many people are going to be able to help you.
Man, you know, like there's this phrase in church, man. It's like, man, you know the glory, but you don't know my story. Like, that's real. Like, you see me here. You have no idea, like, the trauma, like, the loss, the relationships gained and lost. Like, you have no idea. And yeah, I mean, I agree, man. It's like, I think to your point about sometimes in our own insecurity, we'll project our insecurities onto somebody who we think is at a certain place or we think has it all together. And it's like, man, why don't you just engage and work with them and talk to them? 9 times out of 10, if you're authentic, there's a really good chance that you're going to be able to walk away learning something or with a different opportunity to relate to somebody. I mean, that happens to me all the time. I genuinely believe that those energies they attract. And the people that aren't willing to network with you, hey, that's okay too. Have another conversation about, you know, strategic networking, but that's okay too. You know, be willing to engage folks as people. Because I've also yet to meet people who are successful who had just a straight line. It's some crags and some breaks and some valleys and all kinds of stuff. False starts.
Yeah, man. Yeah, that's right. And I, you know, Zach, as we talk about and kind of bounce between an entrepreneur thought process and being a leader in a corporate setting, which is a phenomenal cause and calling as well. One of the things that I think holds people back in the corporate environment is poor work relationships. And, you know, a lot of times we put it on the leader, the manager to relate to us. And yes, they should, right? Yes, managers, leaders should work on eliminating microaggressions in the workplace. Yes, you should have leaders that are empathetic for you being able to bring your whole self at work. Yes, yes, and yes, right? But also, it may allow you to get further faster if you learn to think about the world from your leader's point of view too. Because they've got a different perspective and lens on the business. So if you only think about the negative components of that leader, toxic workplace, toxic boss, all right, well, there's a reason, right, that they're four levels up above you. And it's not all privilege, right? They worked hard, went to a good school, put in the extra hours, maybe get some of that knowledge from them for you. And here's what I know about successful people. Ego is a beautiful thing. And if you talk to somebody successful and say, look, I really admire what you're doing, do you think you can get 10 minutes to just ask two questions? They'd be like, sure. What are you two questions? Can I get 10 minutes, ask two questions? Like, people that are successful love for people validating that they're successful. And they will teach you, not just for you, but as validation of how bright they are, right? And so I think that because we are looking for perfection in our leaders, we sometimes lose sight of the areas of brilliance that they have because we're focused on their areas of growth, right? And I just was encourage people that are listening to do both. It doesn't mean, right, take being mistreated. If somebody's, it doesn't mean that. It means, hey, wait a minute. Let's look. Here's what I'm trying to say succinctly. I try to look at people through the lens of what they do good first, not the lens of what they don't do well or that irritates me first. And what I found is when I look through the lens of the positive things I can gain from someone, I end up getting more out of the relationship. And so just changing that perspective has been really helpful to me over time. It doesn't mean ignore the things they need to work on or grow in. It just means I lean into the things they can help me, teach me, help promote me first. And by the time I get through that, well, some of their nuances, quirks, or different things don't bother me as much because A, I ain't going to be here long. Right. Thanks for the nuggets.
Right.
Right. Right. Or B, I realize they're not that bad after all, right? Yeah. Because there is some good I can gain from the relationship.
There's just so much there about, and kind of like to your point, because we're talking about the fringes, but I don't know if one achieves any type of work-life blend integration without having really effective relationships. Because especially if you're working in the it doesn't matter, actually. If you're working in the context like of a corporation or business, someone else's business or your own business, for me, the better my relationships were, the more ideal my blend was, right? So I think about Living Corporate. We have a great team, right? We have Mike. We have our production manager. We have our content creators. My relationship with the Living Corporate team, my team is strong. So I can delegate. I can give direction. And I can take my hand off of the metaphorical wheel for a couple more hours, spend time with my girls, take a walk, order some Jamaican food, whatever I'm trying to do, and then check back in. But if my relationship was bad, well, then doggone it. Now I got to manage them and manage my clients or be more hands-on on certain of the tactical transactional things. Now my blend is all messed up. Now I'm working like I was working back when I was 22, right? So when you think about the corporate space, hey, having relationships and networking, having an understanding and relationship with your boss, something you said at the top of this conversation, a lot of what you discuss, Donald, like in your wisdom, there's a presumed level of self-awareness, right? So if it's like, look, hey, first of all, to determine your own blend, right? As I think we're wrapping this conversation up, but I want to kind of name some things that were implied. To have the right blend, you need to first set and understand what it is you're trying to achieve in this season, right? hey, I know this season I'm trying to learn as much as I can. I'm trying to get this promotion. I'm trying to get this bag. Cool. Well, that means that I need to talk and communicate with the right people in my ecosystem. So I need to talk to my partner. I need to talk to my kids. I certainly need to talk to my boss, my supervisor, and I need to talk to my mentors and sponsors. Everybody needs to know what my blend is, because if everyone's on the same page and is aware of what your blend is, you have a higher chance. You're now building and creating an ecosystem, an environment to nurture that blend, right? So you think about, you got to tell your coworkers, tell your co-conspirators at your job, hey, man, this is what I'm trying to do. Look, and especially if you're trying to grind and you're trying to get it, you're trying to do whatever you're trying to do. For me, when I was in consulting, I mean, everything was so doggone competitive. And because everything was so hyper-individualistic, Donald, for me, I realized being counter-work cultural meant being more collaborative. And it was disruptive. And it really helped me navigate and do better. But it's about communicating all of that. If you're not communicating that and you're not building that relational network, then your blend is likely going to fail, right? That's what I think about when I hear what you're saying here about communicate and like, okay, hey, what does that look like? You have to have that conversation with yourself. And then you have to have the security, going back to not being insecure, not having an ego, or rather managing your ego, because we all have an ego. This is not a psychological podcast, but we all have an ego. So, right. So it's about managing your ego and being vulnerable enough to let people know, hey, here's what my focus is. Here's what I'm trying to do. And here's how I envision you, boss, or you, coworker, or you, partner, or you, kids. Here's how I see us interacting in light of my goal. Right.
I think you nailed it. I mean, the last thing that I would say that I kind of have is a mental cheat sheet. What do I want? When do I want it? What am I willing to sacrifice to get it? And who can help me? And by answering those questions, it gives me a way to self-coach. Because sometimes there's not a podcast that fits with your situation. There's not an executive coach. You're by yourself with your dream. And you got to figure out your game plan. And I use answering those four questions to help me self-coach when I'm in that quiet space. And there's nobody I can really talk to. Because some of us are very fortunate and have a good network already built. And some of us are struggling and feeling alone. And when I was feeling alone, I still had to figure out a way to make progress. And so that's what I thought about. And so, yeah, I appreciate it. I think work-life blend is something I'm going to incorporate in terms of the way that I phrase it, right? So I appreciate that. So I'll borrow that. I'll try to give you credit when I can, but I'm going to borrow that.
It's okay. You can license it. It's cool.
And it will keep it going from there.
All right, Don, we'll talk soon, man.
All right, man. Appreciate you.
Peace.
Thank you for joining us on High Octane Leadership with Donald Thompson. Today's episode is a step in our collective journey towards leadership excellence. Remember, every story we share and every insight we gain is a piece in the puzzle of our leadership journey. For more insight and detail, hit the subscribe button so that we can stay connected. For deeper information and more episodes, go to donaldthompson.com. Continue to lead with vision and purpose, and until we meet again, embrace your role as a high-octane leader in the ever-evolving world of business.